Being a ministry wife is a vocation without a job description. And let's be honest, sometimes it seems like ministry might be easier if we didn't have one. If you are a ministry wife like me and are looking for hope, perspective, and a little bit of practical advice regarding your role, you're in the right place. Hi, I'm Christine Hoover, author of How to Thrive as a Pastor's Wife. Welcome to the Ministry Wives Podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. Join me as we hear from women from various ministry contexts, having authentic conversations about our shared joys and challenges, even the ones we're unsure we can talk about. No topic is off limits. Today, my guest is my husband, Kyle, who joins me for a Q&A episode. In our conversation, we tackle the questions that you had following our interview with the Mandrells about the backstory of my new book, You Are Not Forgotten. We talk about how we push through in ministry when we were struggling behind the scenes, and we talk about what God taught me that has given me a ton of peace and clarity in my own ministry. Of course, we also talk some about the book, and Kyle shares what he resonated with most as a reader, first reader of the manuscript. And finally, we share about our current season of suffering involving one of our kids. It's been an intense time for us, but we have learned and are learning a whole lot, some of which we share with you in this episode today. So here, friends, is a Q&A conversation with my husband, Kyle, and me. All right, guys, we are here with a Q&A conversation, really just a follow-up conversation about many things going on in our lives, our meaning Kyle and me. Kyle sitting here with me, my husband. Say hi, Kyle.
Hello, hello. Good to do this again with you.
Yes. So we wanted to follow up with some questions that we got after our episode with the Mandrells. And we also just wanted to talk about my new book, You Are Not Forgotten, as well as a life update on the Hoovers. So we will do that.
Let's go.
So if you haven't listened to the episode where the Mandrells, Ben and Lindley, interviewed Kyle and me, you'll definitely want to go back and listen to that before you listen to this episode, because in that episode we shared our story of, I always say it's our COVID story, but it's really not just about COVID. It's more about what was going on with us during the years, or during that time that COVID was happening at the same time.
Yeah, a big renovation and healing and a reorientation to the way that we do life and ministry was taking place. And marriage.
Marriage, everything. Ministry, personal, our own personal things that we needed to deal with.
Right.
So it was like an upheaval time, and a time that God really, I think, changed us in some ways we didn't know we needed, but we needed, and it's been for the better.
For sure. For me, I mean, there was just a lot of confession and looking at different things, being like, man, this needs to look different. I need to live differently. I need to operate differently as in every different way imaginable, our marriage and beyond.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to follow up with you about, you just barely touched on it in the episode, was you mentioned about friendship and how you had to go to some people in your life and kind of say, hey, I've been a bad friend. I'd love to hear more about that, because I know about it, but I would love my listeners to hear more about that, because that was a part of it. It's just relational health for you.
Yeah, and I went to a couple friends that have been friends for life. And just was like, man, I have not been the kind of friend I ought to be, of just not fully available, not fully engaged, not asking meaningful questions, not trying to care for them well, of just being not a fully engaged, fully alert and alive person. And I've probably hurt them in ways that, you know, they may not even know or remember, but I think I did. And I think that there was some good restoration and some conversation and forgiveness that was offered and extended. And I know after that time, you know, that there are two guys in particular that I just talk to every single week now, that there is a deep, deep, beyond friendship, a brotherhood with these guys that is forged from that I'm on the other side of things. I'm in the midst of a difficult scenario, it was a really healing and life-giving thing on the other side of it.
Yeah, because I think that it was recognizing that you didn't have a lot of input from people. I would say it was kind of like thinking of it like you weren't receptive to input. You didn't ask for input, whether it was from me or from friends, but you changed that. And now those conversations that you have with those guys every week, it's saying, hey, here's where I'm at. This is what I need you to pray for. You're asking them to ask you questions, to follow up, to make sure that you're a healthy person.
Yeah. I don't think I was very vulnerable with them. I didn't engage with them on difficult areas or conversation topics. You know, we just kind of kept things on the surface. And so now it looks very different, where we share like on a deeper level that hopefully has been a blessing for them as well. Like they are my brothers for life.
Yeah, for sure. Well, how did you feel about that episode? Because that was the one with the mandrels, was pretty vulnerable. And we knew going into it that that's what we wanted to share. But, you know, it's vulnerable to put your story out there like that. And so I'm wondering how you're feeling about it, and just what was the motivator for you to share?
What's difficult is that the story is good, like God's goodness and how he sees us and he, you know, walks with us, sees us through difficulties and how he's helped you. But also there's a sense for me of it is vulnerable, where like I'm not necessarily the villain in the story, but the, you know, I think Satan and the enemy can sprinkle that into my mind and thoughts, where it's like I'm the bad guy. I'm the guy who caused pain. And that's not fully wrong, but it's a story of God breaking through in some really good ways. But at times it's hard to be like, yeah, and I'm the reason that you were, I'm a contributing factor to a lot of the difficulties that you were feeling and going through.
Yeah, you weren't the reason, but like I say in the episode, I was contributing to our dynamic, and it took me a while to get to the point of wanting to look at that myself. But you're not the villain. I'm not the villain, but the Lord is the hero. He is the good in the story, and that's why we really like, we don't mind sharing, because for me, I always think about David and how, like, Psalm 40, where he's like, I was in a pit, but God brought me out, and now he's put a new song in my mouth, and he wants to tell the assembly, he wants to tell the congregation, this is what God has brought me out of. And so that, for me, is the motivator for sharing our story. It's the motivator for me writing the book that I wrote, You Are Not Forgotten, to share and to give voice to people who are feeling hidden and are in pain because of that, but ultimately to point to God as a God who delivers and restores and redeems and pulls us out of those pits, so we can use our story to point to his goodness. And that was my goal in writing.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, you know, people who have talked to me about that episode of your podcast have, you know, there's a little bit of a twinge, like, oh no, they know more about me being a doofus and really it being a hurtful situation, but the stories that they're telling is to me at least have been stories of help and healing and restoration. Like, I've heard some really great things about people, and they're talking about as a husband and wife, or they're talking about what the way they do ministry together. Mm-hmm. And so if it serves and is a help and a blessing, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, especially for pastors and their wives. I think when we were going through this, I remember thinking, you know what? I bet a lot of people go through this, like pastors and pastors' wives, or just anybody in marriage. People go through this, but they might be in a position where they feel like they can't really tell a lot of people they're going through that. And so I just thought, you know, I bet this is more common than it's not just us. And so that also, I think, is part of the reason why we wanted to share the story.
Yeah. And I know one question that you've gotten from the episode is kind of how you push through when you are sad and working through difficult times. I don't know if that's for a question just for you or if it's for me.
I think it could be for both of us. Just how did we push through? Because we were still very much engaged in church life and ministry, and of course raising children. But I would say one thing that we did during that time is we did pull back a little bit, and making time for a lot of conversation. I mean, I remember almost every night you would come home from work and we would sit in our room for a couple of hours just talking through things, working through. We worked through the book How We Love, which we highly recommend, is a workbook and a book that is written by Christians who are counselors, psychologists, and that we have recommended that book to so many people. So it was just so meaningful to us because it was a lot about emotional health and connection with our spouse through emotions and
like attachment theory and psychology.
So we worked through that together, and we would spend hours every night for a while just talking and really reconnecting. I think a lot of it was reconnecting and realizing, hey, we've got to come back together and really we've got to work on this, because we've gotten to a spot, not that our marriage wasn't, I don't think we were ever like, oh, we're not going to make it.
No.
But like we want to be good. And so what are we going to do to get there?
I think certainly, you know, staff folks noticed that I was undergoing something. You know, I think it was, you know, there's noteworthy where at the old church office, I would go back in this back room that had a study. I was probably there more often than normal. And I think I was asked about that. And then also just in my preaching, I think it came across that I was, I mean, I was telling people from the pulpit that I was struggling and working through things and a season of confession and repentance, and just God was at work.
Yeah.
And it's, but it was hard. It's hard to lead while you're hurting. And I think that was a really difficult thing. But
honestly, it was a blessing that we were going through COVID at that time, because our church did not have a building. And so we had to, wherever we met, we had to abide by the rules of whoever was hosting us. And we had to wear masks during that time in the service. And so I could kind of hide behind that mask. And that was a gift to me that I... There were times where I'm like, I do not have what it takes to smile. I do not have what it takes to talk to people. And so I would come and sit down, which was uncharacteristic of me. I normally greeted or like was in, you know, talking to people, but I would just go and sit and I would leave pretty quickly after. And that was also uncharacteristic of me. But I just needed that space just to be a believer, to come to sing songs and cry while singing them, and receive the word. And sometimes from, you know, most of the time from my own husband, who I was struggling to listen to. But I honestly, what you just said, I remember that sermon. I remember one of those sermons very vividly, and how impactful it was for me to hear the things you were saying, knowing what you were going through behind the scenes. And so I would say we did push through, but at the same time, I think we gave ourselves permission to not do some of the things that we normally would have done.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we pushed through with community. We had people who knew what we were going through and knew that we needed prayer and we needed space and we needed encouragement. And so it's not like we were just pushing through isolated.
Yeah, we weren't alone in it. We had some very, very good friends, some elders. We just walked through the situation with people, and I'm thankful for that. Like, I felt like they showed us love and care.
Yeah.
And I'm really grateful for that.
We also went to Crosspoint, which is a ministry for pastors, anyone in leadership and ministry in the church. We spent maybe 24 hours
maybe
with them, and they're just a couple who kind of just helped us to kind of work through. That was even later in the game, because we were like, we still feel like we need some outside help to figure out where we go from here. So One of the questions too that we got was, is this the reason why you moved and you changed ministry roles? How would you answer that?
I wouldn't say that that's why we moved. We didn't move because of that at all. Like we were trying to rethink through how things could be different, but there were no intentions of moving. You know, the opportunity came out of nowhere for us, and I just had a deep sense that that's what the Lord wanted. So I don't think we weren't looking to leave.
We were trying to make changes in the context where we were in terms of how we did ministry and marriage. And so we were full on working that out. So we weren't like, how do we run from this? Yeah. How do we pull the escape hatch, or how do we run? But the Lord brought this opportunity to us, and it was very clear to us pretty quickly that that's what He was leading us to do. And so I do think that the time, though, prepared us to leave. It prepared us to, and when I say leave, it's not to prepare us to leave, but to prepare us for these roles that He was calling us to.
Yeah, I think that if we wouldn't have learned a lot of the lessons that we learned, I think if we would have left without learning those lessons, I think that it would have been a tough scenario and a tough transition for us, where it's been pretty easy in light of how long we were, you know, at our previous position.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it was just the Lord led, and He provided a unique opportunity for both of us here in this new context. And so that's why.
I don't think that without going through that, we could have done what we're doing now, because for me, I was flailing, almost like flailing for anything that felt validating, or like people seeing what I had to offer. And I, through all of that got kind of refined out of me, where it was like, it doesn't matter. It matters what God sees. It matters what He's called me to do. And I can walk in that confidently, even if other people don't see it or don't affirm it. And so I feel like now where we serve, I feel where I might have felt before some grasping at things, I don't feel like that at all now. And instead, I feel like I'm able to be very grateful for opportunities that I have. But I also don't feel like I have to have those things in order to know that I'm valuable to the kingdom of God and to the church.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the book, because the book is out. You Are Not Forgotten, Discovering the God Who Sees the Overlooked and Disregarded. I think that this book is my most vulnerable that I've ever written, like by far. And so that makes me a little nervous, just like the podcast episode being out there makes me a little bit nervous. But somebody asked me, well, why did you write the book, or how did you know that you were supposed to write this book? And I was thinking about it the other day, and I realized, you know, the idea and actually the contract for this book came when we were still in Charlottesville. And so some of these things we're talking about hadn't happened yet, but the message of the book was already imprinted on me, because God had taken me through this process of showing me what I just said earlier, that He sees, and that's what matters. It doesn't matter what people see or affirm in me. It matters what He sees and affirms in me.
I haven't done a ton of, I've certainly read the story of Hagar, but I think what you do, you really present that story in a beautiful way. It's a story of pain, but it's a story of like God seeing someone in the midst of their pain and maybe doing different things in their life than what they would have thought, but His goodness and His care over someone languishing is just really hopeful. And that story woven together with your story is just a beautiful picture of God's heart.
Yeah. I think one thing for me too is, and I want to be very clear, and when you read it, you'll see, this book isn't a book just about, oh, God empathizes with you and God's just sitting with you in this pain. He does that. But then He requires obedience. You know, he tells Hagar to go back to her life and to live, and she does. And so there is a part of the book where it is God saying to be obedient to me and to know that I see you is to act according to who I am, meaning you're going to forgive those who have hurt you, and you are going to trust me that going back to your life and living, that I'm going to take care of you, and I'm going to advocate for you, and I want you to live according to your gifts and not just wait for someone to kind of pull you up and say, okay, now it's your turn. And so there was a lot of obedience that also had to happen, not just, oh, God sees me and so I feel warm and fuzzy. It's like God sees me and he's asking me to do some pretty hard things in response to that. And so that is a part of the book as well.
I think what I enjoyed about the book is that it's not just a fairy tale and it all ended well and because this happened or that happened, but it's a story of trusting the Lord in the midst of it and believing that God will take care of you and also call upon you to trust him and obey him. And
yeah.
I think that I appreciate that it wasn't just a kind of a movie script, kind of an ending where it's just this, and they all ended up being happy.
Yeah.
It's a gritty story of faith and trust.
Yeah. Yeah. And why I wanted to write it and how I knew that I wanted to write it. One is Kyle. He encouraged me to write this. He encouraged me to say this, you know, he saw a big change in me and he fully supported and cheerleaded that process. But I also, like I said earlier, I felt strongly that God had done something in my life that was good. And if other people are dealing with these things, and I know that they are, I want them to trust God too. I want them to know God sees you and you can trust him and you can obey him and he delivers and he redeems. So that's why I wrote it. Yeah.
It's good.
So I hope you guys will get a copy of it and you'll read it. Let me know what you think.
I know when we, at the time of this recording, what was interesting is we just pulled the books out. You know, you got a box of them and pulled them out. And we all commented about how light it felt.
Yeah.
Like it was a light book.
It feels good.
Yeah, it does feel good. But I think the main idea is because it's a heavy book. It's the book doesn't weigh much, but there's a lot to it. And I think that's what was like, what our thoughts were of like, man, this is a light book, but it has a lot of heft to it.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Well, and something we mentioned in the Mandrell episode, I don't know if anybody heard it, but I think, you know, what God taught me in that season is what is carrying me through our current season of suffering. And, so we wanted to talk about that some. I don't know if you, listener, are aware. I have put things on social media and in my newsletter. But this past 5, 6 months, 7 months, we as a family have been walking through a whole new season of hard and pain and sadness and suffering. And so we wanted to talk about that for a little bit and just kind of update you on our life and what's going on, what we've been learning about God through it. So I guess I'll just tell the story and you can chime in.
Sure.
Kyle and I have 3 boys that they are 20, 18, and 16. And in October of this past year, we got a call from our oldest son, who is a junior in college in California, that he was in the emergency room. And we knew he was going to the emergency room, that he had been having some weird symptoms and just had
stomach
been
issues.
Sick. Yeah, and he just couldn't keep food down. And it had gotten to the point where he needed to go to the ER. And so he went, and we were waiting for some test results. And it was about 11:30 that night when he finally called and said that the doctor wanted to talk to him with family listening. And I don't know about you, Kyle, but in that moment, that was like, we know something is about to come, but I'm not sure that I thought it was going to be what it was.
No. And so it wasn't just a doctor. I remember when she introduced herself, she introduced herself as an oncologist.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah. And I was like, what? You're not an ER doc? You're an oncologist? And then that's when she said that he had cancer, and it had spread all over his body to his brain, heart, lungs, spleen, and stomach.
Yeah. And so, wow, we heard that, and I mean, just even right now, I'm kind of stunned even rehearsing or recalling that. But receiving those words when you're thousands of miles from your son is really challenging. And so we got off the phone. They kind of told us next steps, and we immediately looked at plane tickets, and Kyle got on a plane at like 6 a.m. the next morning to go to California for Will to have surgery, and he did get there in time for his surgery. Thankfully, Will, he runs cross country and track and has a great team and great coaches, and his coach was immediately there with him as soon as he got the diagnosis. And so that was such a blessing to us to know as parents that someone was with him. But Kyle went out there. I stayed back to tell the kids, our other two kids, and to begin calling family and friends and just telling them. It's so, so hard to tell that news to people that you love and that love your son. And so we were just in shock probably for the next probably month.
I don't even know how
maybe
long.
We're still
I
in
was
shock.
In shock.
But he had surgery in California. He was in the hospital for about a week. Kyle was there. I went out to meet them for the big pathology report, and
he had to withdraw from school and move back home with us to live with us in Texas and begin round after round of chemo and.
He was very, very sick at the beginning and before chemo even started, and that was probably one of the hardest times, was seeing your athletic college athlete runner. He had lost about 20 pounds. He was so weak he couldn't walk up the stairs, couldn't keep food down or drink, and we ended up back in the ER here in Texas, and so it was just really touch and go. And then he started his chemo and has completed 4 rounds. And where we are now is, do you want to say where we are now?
Yeah, we're in a season of still waiting and watching. And so, we just look at his cancer tumor markers and see if they're continuing to drop on their own. Then we're just kind of waiting and seeing. And if they don't, then there's more invasive things that we'll be looking at.
Yeah.
But right now it's just watching and waiting, and it's felt like we've been doing that for a while, but that's the right thing for us to do.
Yeah. There's probably more details we could share about that, but let's talk about what we've learned, because this has been a very intense, stressful, at times fearful time for us. And so I would love for you, Kyle, to share what you have learned, anything you've learned, but I'm thinking like about God or about yourself or about suffering in general, and how to engage sufferers.
Yeah. So people tell me all the time, I can't even imagine what you're going through. And I tell them, don't imagine that. Don't spend time, you don't want to spend time imagining that. And so I don't think that there's any way to prepare yourself for that kind of phone call and then all the next things that happen in your life that just transform your existence in a moment. But yet, we have just seen the goodness of God time and time again. I couldn't imagine what this would have been like, but also we've just seen the Lord's goodness time and time again. And I think for me, I've been in pastoral ministry, my adult life, and I have seen the church at its best. For me personally, it's been really hard to receive care, where usually as the pastor, I'm the one administering, making sure that people get care, and to be on the receiving end is a very humbling and difficult place to be, to be the one broken and hurting and struggling, and then other people come running. And so it's been good for me personally to not be the giver of care, but the receiver of care. But then also, just every church that we have been a part of, we have seen God's people come and just bless us. The church in Virginia has, you know, sent us just waves and waves of notes and gift cards. The church in Austin, the one in College Station, our son's church where he was an intern in Santa Barbara. Like, we've just seen Jesus' bride at her very best. And if I've always loved the church, and I love the church even more now.
I like to think of it when I think about the prayers of God's people for us and the care. It's kind of like a crowd surfing at a concert. Like, I feel like we, in some ways, have probably even been protected from more suffering and pain because people have carried us through and lifted us and passed us along, like, or carrying us through this process. And so that, I love that picture because it just, that's what it feels like. It feels like we're being carried, not just by people, but by the Lord. And that's one thing that I've really sticks out to me, is that the Lord gives me what I need for each day, because there have been most days since we got that call that I've woken up and I just feel distressed. I feel like worried about something. I feel overwhelmed. I can't do this. This feels like an endurance race, and I don't have endurance, so I can't get to the end. We're not going to make it. And every day, God reminds me, I'm not expected to be strong and to get myself across the finish line. He does that. He is the strength. He is the power. And He has filled me up each day to give me what I need for that day. And then the next day, when I wake up and I have a new distress, or maybe it's the same distress, He will give me, and He has given me, what I need for that day. So I feel like I'm learning to live more day to day than I ever have before in my life. And that's a good thing for me, because I'm such a planner. I'm such a, like, achiever, run forward, look at the big picture. And it's really forced me to see my need and my dependence upon God and to rely on Him every day for that.
Yeah, we can't plan far in advance because we don't know what will be required. And so it just, your world has to get really small. And there are times then that's been really hard for us. Mm-hmm. And then there are times where that's been almost like a sweet gift, where you just live one day at a time.
Mm-hmm. And circle up. Especially the first few months, we just circled up family of five. Like, we couldn't do much else. No. And that was good. That was right and good. So anything else that comes to mind that you've learned through this?
It's been interesting for me to learn how to engage with people and how people engage with us about it, of how to help others, what's helpful, what's not helpful, those kinds of things. And so I think what would be awesome if we did is, and just within Christendom, Christianity, we all went through, like, here's how to help people, here are things to say, maybe what not to say. And so I think that those are understanding how people see us and view us and how they respond to us with what we've walked through. And in reality, everyone who is engaged with us has been loving and kind.
Yeah.
It's just how nuanced and well did they have, were they able to do that? And so there are times when people will say something and I'm like, man, that's not very encouraging, or it's odd, or it doesn't relate, and I just have to tell myself they don't know what to do and they don't know what to say, but they're trying to say something.
Yeah.
And I just have to chalk that up as don't get upset about that, but just they're trying to express love.
Yeah.
And I think in reality is we don't know what to say because there's nothing that someone can say that is going to take away. Like, we wouldn't have been able to hear from anyone and then been like, oh my gosh, we don't feel the pain and hurt anymore.
Right.
It's just gone. You know, so it's, I think there is a sense of just understanding that a lot of times we don't know what to say. And so to receive whatever is said as expressions of love and care from people.
We've talked about it as like an endurance race. And I think as we think about racers and what people need when they're racing is they need encouragement. I have found that to me is the most helpful thing is if somebody says, you're doing well, keep going. You're trusting God, keep going. Because you don't, instead of encouragement, a lot of times what you get is a lot of questions about the sickness or what's the latest or what's an update. And that can be very, very exhausting for the sufferer, for the endurer. Because it's kind of like, as Kyle said before, you know, sometimes when you're running the race, people hand you weights. And then there are some people who take those weights away through, and for me, that's been through encouragement. But sometimes the having to explain it again, you know, for the 100th time, that feels like being handed a rock or a weight while I'm running. And so that's something that I've learned. It's like sometimes less is more, just saying a quick, like, I'm praying for you.
That's what's encouraging for me is when people just say, we're praying for you, we're praying for your son. And then if they get specific about when or how, that's extra meaningful for me. Like some folks are like, we pray for Will every night at dinner time. And I'm like, oh my gosh, thank you.
That's super like encouraging.
And so those are the kinds of things. For me, I get encouragement when I know that someone is talking to the Lord about us and our son.
Yeah. For sure. I think one thing that feels like a weight added is when someone's emoting their how they feel or how they might feel in that situation. And it's almost like, here, can you please hold what I feel along with what you feel? That's really, really difficult for me when I'm running an endurance race. So that comes to mind as well.
No doubt.
Yeah. But so all that to say, that's where we are. We're hopeful that we'll be able to go back to college in the fall. But you know, that's all in the Lord's hands, but we are doing well. Wouldn't you say?
Correct. Yes.
I think we're doing well. Yeah, the Lord has provided and cared for us.
I think both of us wake up each morning and we seek the Lord to help us day by day.
Yes. So please pray for Will, pray for us. There's just been a lot going on, a lot of change with us moving and me taking on roles and with Will coming back home and going through cancer treatments and all of that. And so I do feel like the Lord is bringing some change for me. And I hope that will still include writing. I am working on a Bible study on 2 Corinthians right now for Lifeway.
Yeah,
so that's fun.
Let's go.
I definitely see myself continuing to write, continuing to teach the Bible. But I definitely feel the Lord kind of pricking my heart and bringing some things that he wants me to lay down. And so we'll see what all that will entail in the coming months and the next year. That's it. So that's all for today. We just wanted to jump on and say, to answer some of your questions, but also just say thanks so much for listening and encouraging us and praying and praying for us and supporting our family through all that we are going through.
For sure. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the Ministry Wives podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. If you found this content helpful, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your podcast platform or share it with a friend. You can find this podcast and other helpful resources at ministrywivespodcast.com.
Hi, my name is Catherine Renfro, and I serve as the National Director of Women's Evangelism at the North American Mission Board. Studies show that women make up 50 to 60% of any given church. Imagine the impact if women are mobilized to live on mission in the places where they live, work, and play for the sake of God's kingdom. For free resources to equip women to live out the gospel, check out the Women's Evangelism Hub at namevangelism.com/women.